Yes, meeting to order. It is 3:05 on January 22nd, 2008. Those present are Representative Sisna, Representative Gardner, Representative Roses, and myself, Wilson. We do have a quorum, and so we are going to go ahead. Please turn off your cell phones if you have them with you. Cell phones can interfere, actually, with they can pick up the recording equipment over here, and so even when they are in vibrate mode. So if you're here in the meeting room, please turn your cell phones off. This will really help the secretaries recording the meeting, and the people participating at the LIOs can hear a lot better. And then finally, it makes a difference on the gavel-to-gavel coverage, which we don't have today. But before we get started today, there's a few housekeeping things I'd like to mention. Hopefully, our meetings will be starting right on time. Our Tuesday and Thursday meetings and our Saturday meetings will start at 9:00 in the morning, and you already have a schedule of which Saturdays that we will be working. And let the record show that Representative Keller has joined us. The microphones on the committee table and on the testimony desk are really very sensitive. They can pick up distracting noises like shuffling of paper, whispering, drumming your fingers, clicking your pencils, and things like that. So please try not to do those type of things, or if you're going to sneeze or something, if you push your button first, that does help. our HESS secretary today is Kelly Burnett, and she's going to keep a record of our meetings. And our moderator is Sammy Conan. She handles the technical operations for the LIOs. So with that, we'll get started with our bill. We have House Bill 273. It's the education funding bill. And Representative Hawker, would you like to start? And what I plan to do is hear from the bill sponsor, then the department, and then other testimonies. So with that, Representative Hawker, if you would go ahead.
And thank you, Madam Chair. It is a pleasure to be on this side of the table with you. Just again, for your record keeping here, I am Representative Mike Hawker, representing District 32, Eagle River, Anchorage, and the Kenai Peninsula. The bill before us is the fruition of much work by many legislators over the past several years. Those of us that have been involved in recent budget cycles have been very aware that school funding issues across this state have, at the end of the day, been something that became a very sort of contentious, regional. Almost there are certain parts of the state had some issues and concerns, other parts had the other. And we really kept reaching impasses as we got to the final budget process. And then as we, of course, were subject to session limits where we absolutely have to gavel out at midnight on, used to be the 120th, now that it's the 90th day, sort of stopgap agreements had been reached over the past several years. And sort of, well, we try to take care of this, and you get a little of this, and, well, we'll come back next year and really try to figure it out. At the end of last session, I think the issue had really reached a head point. We all discussing the budget, all the communities across the state, and again, particularly involved in legislative involvement in both the House and the Senate, had come to a point where the real issue, I really believe that most of the real issues had been on the table. It just needed some dedicated time to address those issues, sort of reconcile them, and try to bring back to our body. Recognize our process here is just that, as a process of collaboration and compromise, but to bring forth a compromise proposal that we could use, that we, the legislature, would be able to support and hopefully provide a stable base for school funding now and for several years to the future. Hope something be as durable as possible. And Madam Chair, to that end, at the end of last session, the legislature passed what was Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 11. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 11 created the Joint Legislative Education Funding Task Force. I had the privilege of chairing that task force over the summer, where we met. Excuse me for back of just half a step here, but as a task force, we were specifically charged with three activities. We were to evaluate proposals that were based on, and it's important, available facts and conclusions pertaining to school district cost factors and the foundation formula. We'll discuss those a little bit more in detail. We were charged with recommending improvements or additions to the laws providing for education funding, and we were charged with taking public comments on education funding and school district cost factors. We as a task force did just that. I would like to, and Madam, if you indulge me just a moment on the task force, I would like to publicly thank those legislators who participated in that process. We had a tremendously successful process, involved very much the legislature, the public, in a very open and frank debate on these issues that resulted in the proposals that you'll be hearing in this committee this year. Again, I was privileged to chair that task force. My vice chair was Senator Stedman, and in alphabetical order, our appointed task force members were Senator Ellis, Senator Hoffman, Representative Jewell, Representative Kelly, Representative Roses, who sits as vice chair of this committee, Representative Paul Seaton, also on this committee, Senator Gary Stevens, and Senator Gary Wilkin. Our public member, appointed by the governor, was Mr. Carl Rose, the president, chairman, executive director, but that guy at the Association of Alaska School Boards, who we're privileged to have in the audience with us. And I sincerely thank all those who participated in this, because, again, we had a it was a very thoughtful, very methodical process where we analyzed the school funding formula. We analyzed all its components. We looked at the issues that were on the table. And I believe we have arrived at a proposal that consists of several components that really do lay a foundation for stabilizing school funding in the state, and really allow us as legislators to focus on achieving academic excellence and perhaps worry a little bit less about every year really struggling for just enough money to keep the doors open. So, Madam Chair, the proposal that we have before us today is sort of the, if you want to call it, this is the meat and potatoes bill. This is the bill that involves really the increased funding components that we've recommended as a task force, as a collaborative, a body working together, debating the issues, and we reached the collaborative conclusion, the consensus, that this is the proposal we would like the legislature to entertain. You will also be hearing bills here asking us to establish a Standing Committee on Education. That's a very important part of continuing to address issues that we all as the task force recognize were still on the table. We are not, are not solving everything with one bill. It isn't a process that needs to continue. So you'll be hearing that bill. Had other specific issues come up that were heartfelt by the committee, warranted legislative attention that you'll also hear, but they're perhaps not as operative as this bill, which is the core funding bill, sort of that core, what additional commitment will we put, financial commitment will we put into education this session. And the bill actually, it turns out it's really a pretty simple bill. Say we've got the sponsor statement, I'm sure, in front of you. But there's really four components to this bill in the recommendations for immediate funding. And actually, excuse me, Madam, but again, I just want to step myself back a moment. Also acknowledge that, well, the proposals that have been brought forth in legislation are proposals that were approved by a preponderance, a consensus of our committee. We did, as a task force, as a committee, agree these were the proposals to come forward. I mean, as you all know, legislative proposals involve a great deal of, again, compromise, accepting the facts, not always getting everything you want, but realizing there's a greater good to be served in the balance. But it would be inappropriate of me not to recognize that we had individual members of the committee who, to varying degrees, dissented with our conclusions. And I felt that it was, as chairman, it was very important that the dissent, the record of dissent, be presented with the same prominence and consideration as the the predominant concurrence of the committee. So as you'll find in the back of the report, and our report in its entirety was distributed to everyone in the legislature on the first day. And I do have the, and I say, and I committed to include verbatim the editorial comments of members who wish to comment in any way, and pretty much it was the dissent of activities of the committee. So I would commend you to consider those as this bill moves forward. They sort of range from nitpicking to the fact that, you know, a complete disagreement with the process we undertook. But I would, again, Representative Rose's privilege to serve with, I was privileged to serve with Representative Rose's on that committee, and I suspect he would agree with me that at the end of the day, we, as a task force, had a very strong consensus support of the proposals that we will be presenting here in new legislation.
Representative Hawker, I listened in on each meeting, and I must say that I really commend you on how you conducted the meetings and how the whole process went along. I thought it was a very good job. And like you said, you know, when we have a consensus and try to come up with what everybody wants, it's kind of a give and take for everybody. Do I like everything in the bill? Not necessarily. But I think overall we made some real good progress for schools. And I appreciate that. And while I've got the floor here, I just like the record to show that Representative Faircloth has joined us.
And thank you very much, ma'am. I really believe that is, I think that's the most important sort of introductory framing comment we can make on the legislation you'll be entertaining in this committee. Because I do believe you are the first committee briefer for all the legislation that is being introduced here. And that is, again, it was a collaborative effort. It involved a great deal of public process. And I am asking on behalf of our task force, this committee, to approve, I use the word sort of to respect the work product that we arrived at this summer after, again, this lengthy, involved public process. Even though we may all have our own take on the way we, you know, I'd rather shade it this way and you'd rather shade it that way or someone, but again, this was a collaborative process. It has come out of years of strife in this legislature. Again, we undertook this mission, hopefully, with the commitment on all our parts to respect the process that we went through. So the bill before you addresses, again, the major funding recommendations that we made in the, or that came out of the committee process, our task force process. And I'm looking at the sponsor statement. I'm actually going to kind of talk about to these in reverse order. Certainly we can talk about any number of details, but also in this committee and ourselves, won't try to explain the funding formula because I think these are components that we are all very familiar with. But our proposal, we did increase the base student debt. We recommended a three-year plan that we arrived at, a three-year increase in the base student allocation of $100 per year. That's each year, add another $100 to the base student allocation. Now, on this one, I would offer to the committee, there's always some, and if you go to the exact wording in our report, it was a minimum of $100 a year. And again, while I can only truly speak for myself, but I believe I thought it was an important component of our consensus that we all at this table know that in the past years when we have been increasing the base student allocation, it has been the only money we've been putting into our new money we've really been putting into our schools. That at this time, what our schools have been experiencing, our school districts, is a very significant inflation in the costs of their retirement systems. A great deal of the money that the legislature has put into the base student allocation has gone entirely, it hasn't gone to the classroom, it has gone to paying the unfunded past service liability of the retirement systems. One of the, our report, our consensus, and you'll find a page in there, is that the proposals made were predicated and presumed that another piece of legislation that is passing through this body, which is the Senate Bill 125, which would involve the state taking responsibility directly for a material portion of those retirement liabilities passes the legislature, and that outside of these task force recommendations, the school district's burden for these retirement system liabilities are substantially reduced by that other legislation. I'll be quite frank with the committee, if that legislation fails, I think we then need to, later in the process here, as we find out exactly, you know, again, how things mature during this session, we need to reconsider if the $100 a year base student increase in the base student allocation would be sufficient. But at this point in time, I would ask the committee to respect the $100 level with the understanding we all have that it has there's a certain dependence there on that other piece of legislation and what the legislature determines as a matter of policy to do with the outside funding of the retirement system liability. Perhaps then the offset, these next two points were really, base student allocation goes straight to everyone in the state. I think everyone that's the money we need to get into the classrooms in our district. One district, literally may need textbooks. The other district may need to repair its building. Who knows? But every district needed the base student allocation. The next two areas are areas where there definitely is a regional difference in priorities, and it was really the basis for the dissension that I think has occurred in the legislature in the past couple of years. That's our district cost factors and our intensive needs students factor. Again, the district cost factors are those where we have a factor in our formula that recognizes that it costs more money in certain communities to do business than it costs in other communities. That has, again, those of us that have participated in the legislative process know that the district cost factor has been a process that's literally been at concern since our current school funding formula was adopted back in, I think it was 1998. It has never been satisfactorily resolved to or never has been resolved satisfactorily to, I think, those communities most affected. And I think I would look at Representative Wilson's district as one of those that it was a major issue in your district. We recommend here adopting and phasing in the ICER cost factors. As folks know, I don't think there's anyone that would stand up and say those numbers are the right numbers, that there's not flaws inherent in that, but they are the best information we have available today. And I, again, would point out that our charge as a committee was to make our proposals on available facts and conclusions. We were not directed to go out and reinvent this wheel. And where I think folks can shoot some very large arguments and take very serious issue with the methodology and those ICER cost factors. Likewise, we also know that they're also somewhat dated. And I think we all know that, for example, we've seen energy costs increasing substantially, regularly, and subsequent to the coming up with these cost factors. So the best information we had available were these. We, again, as a committee, at lengthy discussion on how to go about it, we recommended a phase-in of those factors, again, as the best information available to us. Now, that was really, and that really affects the rural schools, the remote school districts. It was, it's a huge issue for those folks. A lesser issue for rural, but a huge issue for the urban schools, particularly those schools in the largest districts, and that would be the Anchorage School District, is what we call the intensive needs funding. Historically, we had been providing a student that qualifies for intensive needs and for without, I'll be quite frank, I'm not qualified to give you the exact definition, but these are students with specific handicaps or impediments or challenges that require just clearly additional services, whether it be the child is literally attending school on a stretcher, whether they require some special hearing devices to facilitate their ability. It truly became apparent in the testimony before our task force that our current funding of those needs had fallen definitely behind what it was costing to provide them. The way it had been dealt with in the past is we simply used a base multiplier of 5 times the base student allocation for a qualifying student, and then the school district was told, just go out and deal with it, take care of it. And it was, you know, school district, we cost factors here, the base student allocation, and just, you know, round numbers say it's been in the area of $5,000, five times 5,000, and it's a $25,000 for one of those students. But we had testimony, very clear, I think, convincing testimony from multiple school districts that those costs realistically probably average, and again, everyone would be careful about saying, were substantially higher than that, let's just say, and where we clearly have individual cases, we can see where it costs over $250,000 a year to keep a single student supported in our public school system. So sort of that was a trade-off. That was an issue in the urban schools. And the proposal that we reached was to, again, progressively increase that multiplier, first to 9 times, then to 11, and then to 13 times, getting us, again, up to a level that, again, testimony supported was more appropriate in the current environment faced by our schools. And the last factor that's in the bill before you is sort of a protective measure, and it's something that we get concerned about in this state where we have an enrollment-based system. And if a school faces a sudden decline in its enrollment, it is its funding by formula is truncated rather abruptly. And certainly we know schools are parts of our community that don't really change as abruptly as an external factor causing an enrollment shift might imply. The best example might be the case where you might have a base closing that could substantially affect a school to reduce its student population. Well, for us suddenly to say your funding is hugely truncated, it's such a disruption, an inappropriate disruption in the school, compromising literally the quality of education in that community. That's been an issue that had been on the departments of our State Department of Education's plate for quite a while, and they just, very conveniently, have had a proposal in the hopper, so we adopted that language that would provide for a step down of funding in the case of abrupt student enrollment changes to smooth that sort of transition. So sort of with the blending of those four components, you have really the crux of the financial increase that we're preparing, the increased financial aid, financial support, financial commitment to our schools statewide. Is it a perfect solution? Absolutely not. Can each of us argue for a different implementation? Absolutely yes. Again, I would just ask the committee to consider that, again, this had been a very thorough, thoughtful, well-recognized process that was conducted in the public, and I have no idea who will be testifying here, but I suspect if we have school district testimony, I would hope they would be able to reinforce my statement that this was a very well-received process where the public, the school districts, the affected parties felt very participatory, very involved. It was very accessible to them. That this consensus that we reached as a task force really also is a consensus that can be accepted by our school system. Likewise, clearly, folks that represent the teachers' labor unions, folks at the schools would always like more than we've offered. Likewise, we had members on our committee that felt we were offering too much at this time. And, you know, that classic tension is always going to exist. So that tension does exist. But again, Madam Chair, at the risk of carrying on a little too long, because it really was a fabulous process, a fun process. We really, I think, laid the foundation to do something really good for our schools. But again, even like I say myself, I take issues with certain components of our recommendations. I will stand in support of the aggregate recommendation as a way for us to take this issue forward in the next couple of years in the legislature. So that is this bill. The other one that I will be back with, and I will use it where we have not solved specific issues that we know still exist and where we need to continue this process. This is the beginning. This is the genesis of really focusing legislative attention on education. Two of the bills you will be also hearing here, one is a bill to continually reevaluate the district cost factors, and the other will be to establish the standing committees of education in our body to undertake those efforts. So please also, as you look at this bill, keep in mind it is part of a package. With that, Madam Chair, I really appreciate your indulgence.
Okay, thank you. So just for the people that are off-site here, so their base student allocation, it will be increased by $100 per year for the next 3 years. District cost factors, we're phasing in 50% of the ICER this year, and the remaining 50% will be implemented over the next 4 years.
Yes, ma'am, that is the
and
proposal before you.
And intensive needs goes from 9 times this year. Next year it will be 11 times, and the next year 13 times. And if they have declining enrollment, and if it decreases by 5% or more than the previous year ADM, the districts can add 75% of the difference in the first year, 50% of the difference in the second year, and 25, so it's a slow step down instead of a big jolt.
Yes, ma'am, that is exactly correct.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the committee? Representative Gardner?
Thank you. That was an excellent presentation, and when you thanked all the members of your committee, I think it's appropriate for this body to recognize the work you did and the leadership showing. I think the process was pretty flawless, and the result I clearly is, if it's a result of a good process, even if it's imperfect, it shows a lot of promise. So I'd be disinclined to support any significant proposed changes, but I have a couple of questions and sort of clarification. Firstly, on the ADM, if I understand correctly, for the average student, for most kids, there's a count date, and the number goes from that date. But for the special needs kids, there's a reference to the enrollment as opposed to their actual attendance. So can we speak to why we would use the count date rather than enrollment in one case and not in the other?
If I understand, Madam, through the Chair, Representative Gardner, this is not a perfect solution. I think, as we know, the base student allocation at the commencement of a school year, there's a measurement date where you figure out what it is, and mm-hmm. then when the population in that school goes up and down through the rest of the year, we don't tweak the funding formula. That, you know, can be argued as an inherent fallacy in our system, as well as I think the folks in the Department of Ed would also argue that it's a matter of practicality that we adopt mm-hmm. some of these fixed dates. Likewise, the intensive student needs funding, it is a fixed measurement, and it is not, the funding does not follow the student. So if you have that most expensive student, you know, some student with multiple handicaps, example that commences the school year in my district in Anchorage, you know, that money goes into the Anchorage School District. You know, at the commencement of that school year, that child moves to Representative Wilson's district, a smaller community with limited resources. That community does not that money does not follow the student. It was an issue we discussed in the committee. It is one that we do not have a resolution for, and I freely acknowledge it. It remains an issue that for future consideration by our body.
Madam Chair, and follow-up question. Thank you. Do we have a sense about whether we have kids coming from small areas to large areas over migrating over the school year or going the other way? I mean, who's mostly impacted by the fact that the funding doesn't follow the kid?
Through the Chair, Madam Gardner. and my only hesitation, I was just waiting to see if the question was done, but through the Chair, Madam Gardner, based on the testimony that we had, and particularly the public testimony, as well as testimony from our Department of Education, I would ask you to confirm with them, coordinate with them my response here, but if there's a sort of a trend that was identified, it was really the trend that that this issue was really an issue that predominant in particularly the Anchorage and Fairbanks and a bit Juneau, because we have the medical centers of the state, and particularly Anchorage, where we attract some of the more profound medical, you know, into students, young people with medical needs. So that sort of, there was definitely a migration, but it was a migration where, because of the sort of the medical facilities, support facilities in the larger communities, we would tend to pull students there, so we had this population. We did have testimony, that same question about, well, what, you know, the migraine, how much of a, is it a real issue for us? The testimony we had was that, well, yes, we can point at specific instances, but none of the school districts that testified identified it as a priority concern. It was not viewed as a, I guess, you know, something that rose to the, you know, high enough on the concern list of the districts, both urban and rural. And we did have testimony from a great number of school districts across the state here. So, you know, again, as such, it was very much part of our committee discussion that we did not, you know, further pursue that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. And also let the record show that Representative Seaton has joined us about 15 minutes ago. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam.
Representative Seaton, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a task force member, we did have testimony specifically. The question was, is this always migrating from smaller communities into Anchorage? And it was that it's not a one-way street. The predominance is, as Representative Hawker stated, that you have more over time in Anchorage, but in any one year you may have people going back to other communities. So it wasn't something that we could identify as a problem that one district experienced and other districts did not. So it wasn't a, I mean, if it was something that could have been easily seen and dealt with, we would have considered it much as one of the solutions, but the data doesn't support that kind of particular solution with the level at which we analyzed it.
And if I might, Madam Chair, follow up, and I concur completely with that observation, but I also realize that I may be giving the impression that this is only an urban issue. The special needs student, you have a particularly a single expensive student, it's even more profoundly felt by a smaller district mm-hmm. that has a smaller overall budget. So, you know, to that end, though, and we had, I think, I don't remember if it was a multi-year comparison or if it was just a couple of months of where the student census was across the state. And it did surprise me occasionally that you have some communities with a concentration of very small communities with a concentration of special needs students. So I really do want to emphasize it is an issue, and it is something that this funding does not just benefit the large urban schools. It is truly a material component of school funding across the state.
Thank you. Representative Keller.
I'd just like to say thanks for your hard work. I attended some of the task force, and as the summer went on, I kind of drifted toward the fishing, and I saw you guys were in there. I listened, and I appreciate your work. You made mention of the average cost of an intensive needs student. Did you, as a task force, get that number at all? I mean, what are we talking about here for a student, the costs across state? An intensive needs student, the definition, too, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Keller, I think the most thorough testimony on the average cost of these students really came from both the Anchorage School District and from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. And I'll be looking at my members here to guide me, but without having that testimony directly in front of me, I think we were really looking at I believe you're hearing that the average cost now is in, you know, $70,000 to $80,000. As was pointed out, an individual where we have a few students that may be costing $250,000 or more even can skew that number even more thoroughly. But the testimony, again, on these multipliers was that if the school district had their way, they really were asking for, if I recall right, it was 15 to 17 times multipliers. And again, with all respect, there's always that little tension. I figure if they're asking for 17, they're probably asking for a little, you know, they're asking for the maximum. At this point, we did not feel comfortable going beyond, again, in this balanced compromise, looking at where the financial consequences, and again, this was, again, at best a compromise amongst many thoughtful people that came up with the numbers in front of us.
Okay. And what I'd like to do, because this does have to do with school funding, and we do want to get it out of this committee into the next committee so that we can maybe do some early funding this year. So what I'd like to do is have Eddie Jeans come up and speak a little bit. You might be able to answer that last question about what the...
I had another question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, I do have another question for the sponsor.
Just wait a minute. And then, because what we'd like to do is, there's a lot of people online, and I'd like to make sure that they get their testimony in, too.
Okay, thank you.
Could I, one more thing? Yeah. I realize it's easy to get on to finance. Thank you. And this committee is very interested, you know, in a policy. The governor has stated that the forward funding will provide the opportunity for innovation and improvement of the outcome of our education system. That was almost a quote. And I was wondering if you would explain explicitly how the task force would say that having a guaranteed increase to cover the intensive needs students, for example, or the cost factors addresses that. I mean, can you come up with a quick description of how innovation is increased? And I want to add the follow-up right now, because I just want to give you the drift here.
Follow-up, Representative Keller.
The question I have is, did you hear from the alternative schools, like charter schools? I see nothing in the bill and the funding, addressing the funding related to correspondence programs. I see nothing in there on charter schools, and I'm just curious if what you heard and learned from that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Keller, you get two very separate questions there, actually maybe three very separate questions. On the issue of the structure of our budget for this year and future years, that is something that is, you know, obviously in its genesis at this point in the Finance Committee. The governor has proposed a funding structure that is somewhat, and a sort of a forward vision that is somewhat divergent from the course the legislature has undertaken the past couple of years. But that's being worked out. I think with anyone that's been following that knows that at the end of the day, we will in some manner utilize the – I'd be very careful about committing other people's votes. I believe that at the end of the day, we as a legislative body will continue to utilize the education fund that we established a couple of years ago to be certain – and as while we have the financial resources, the surplus revenues now – we will, in fact, continue to forward fund, that is, put enough money in the bank today to be sure that we've got the money to pay for our stated commitment for the following year. We will not be in the same situation we were in when I see several of us at this table started in the legislature, and at least one of you was here before us, where we came in with a deficit situation where we honestly did not know coming in January, whenever, how in the world we were going to get the money just to meet the prior year, you know, the amount we spent in the prior year, let alone the increased expenses. So we will definitely be establishing some mechanism to, say, forward fund. That's it again. There's no question in my mind that will be a priority. The exact mechanism, the exact structure will be worked out as, again, the budget process goes forward. The other issue, small charter schools, you know, homeschooling. We did have testimony. Was considered by the task force, and again, go back and find the record where we did discuss those matters. But again, it was an issue where we set the price, where we could, as a task force, reach what we believed was a proposal that could go forward through this body. We did not include any increments for the small charter schools. Again, that is specifically, and I think if you go through the task force report, you'll see it is commended to what we hope will be a standing committee of education to take up as a separate matter on its own merits.
Representative Garden, did you have a
thank you. Yes, this bill is about state funding for education, but there's another element of education funding, which is local contributions. And one of the concerns in my district is that although Anchorage doesn't always tax to the max for that, to the cap, we also have bonds that we support and pay for. And there are some communities that don't have local cash contributions, and I think that is a matter of concern, at least in urban areas. Did the task force look at this at all?
Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, I would like to defer the answer of that to Representative Seaton, who led that debate. But no, I sincerely, Madam, absolutely those issues were broached. They were very openly on the table, and I think I can speak for all of us here that were on that task force that we had very frank discussions on these issues. And I certainly am one of those, it's very concerned about not having some element of local contribution, local ownership, local pride of the process in the community. Likewise, some folks out in the hinterlands have very grave concerns about the mill rate issue, which also, you know, may be viewed as benefiting larger communities that have an increasing property tax valuation base. So again, those were both issues recognized, identified as we were. In my opinion, as the chair, I looked around the committee, and if we were to go very far on either one of those, I really believe, again, we would have gotten into a policy call so difficult that we would not have been able to reach consensus on those items. So with respect, I have the luxury of the low-hanging fruit and did not we as a committee did not make recommendations on those other than to commend them to standing committees of education for further consideration.
Representative Roses.
Thank you. And it sort of wraps several of your questions, Representative Keller, as well as Representative Gardner. That was one of the reasons we had the discussion about creating that standing committee on education, because those were very serious issues, the charter schools, the correspondence school, kind of level of funding they should have. And we knew that if we got into those discussions that this entire package would have imploded on itself, especially when you started talking about local contribution. So after having a lengthy discussion, especially on local contribution, we decided that if we didn't set that issue aside, we would never get agreement. And so what we concentrated on were those issues that were pieces that had been put together in last year's legislation on the last day to try to get us to closure. And so we took those items that had been single source funded through other mechanisms, through the capital budget or whatever way we could get it funded to come to closure, with the understanding that those were the components that we need to work on the most. It's certainly no one to a person on the committee wanted to totally ignore charter schools, correspondence schools, or the local contribution. But we knew that if those discussions continued, that we would not get to a final product. So it was the understanding of everybody on the committee. That was the point of creating a separate committee on education, so we could get into substantive discussions about how do we really implement changes in education, the policies and procedures and programmatic changes that we never get to in this body because we spend all of our time talking about the money. And so your question about how is this forward funding going to improve education? By taking the money issues off the table, and then we're able to concentrate on the substantive issues about how do we do things differently or better to improve student outcome. And so that was very much a part of the discussion, and that's why we took it the direction that we took it. We don't want to pass over it lightly. We want to give it a substantive discussion.
Representative
C. Thank you. And one of the other aspects for putting those off was they are data sensitive and require a lot of data, a lot of analysis. The task force met 2 days every 2 weeks, but it's not like the in-depth data analysis and really getting your hands around those issues that aren't so much policy calls but are actually wrapped around how do we go forward. We had this study on the geographic cost differential. We've had several studies. We had data. You know, we might always like better data, but as far as looking at those other issues, we really don't. Data needs to be developed, and so that's why those were put off to the committee. But I would like to just put one thing on the table. I've had some questions about the step-down provision, and that is, how does that apply to small schools that drop below 10? And if we don't have that, we can wait for the Department of Education to address that. But I just wanted to let everybody know that that has been a question that's come up to me.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, on that one, I would defer to the department, if you don't mind, ma'am.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I touched a nerve. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, Anyone who has had the privilege of serving with Rep. Seaton knows how, when he is involved in a process such as this task force, he's an invaluable member because of his drill down to detail.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, it really is what made our process work so well. And I would also point out, Representative Seaton has, he disagrees with certain points of this. He's put it on the record here with us. But, as always, he's a team member, invaluable to our team.
Representative Kelly.
I want to respect, Madam Chair, your desire to be done with this and press on. But I just want a point of clarification on why I asked the question. When we talk about innovation and producing and improving the outcome of our educational product, I have a hard time wrapping my mind around how the financial recommendations you're making in this bill do that specifically. I don't have as much problem when I look at innovation that is already there and in process, like with what the state ASB is doing with the digital consortium and what some of the programs are doing, delivering high quality teachers over a distance for where there's efficiency is involved and just really improving home. The library just gave me a packet and they have homework assistance available to students online, readily available. These are the kind of things that really get me excited about the end outcome. I have a hard time getting excited about things like I'd rather just have it a big block grant, that was there for the next 5 years. I mean, I'm all for the funding and the education of our children. It's just that I would like to see the money somehow, the forward funding, somehow be tied to incentives for increasing the bottom line, getting our kids really excited about what they're doing, and I think we're going there. But I just want to get that on the record. When the decision was made in the task force to stick with the existing formula and to work within it and try real hard, I can understand why they did that pragmatically. But to me, it was just hard to take that disconnect between the innovation and some of the things that are going on. Thank you.
Okay. Eddie Jeans, let's have you step up and make a few comments. You heard what some of the questions are, and you might be able to zero in on some of the answers a little bit better.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Alaska Department of Education. And Madam Chair, I too would like to thank Representative Hawker for his leadership in the committee process this summer. I too would have preferred to have been fishing, but it was a good process, and I really appreciate his leadership. I'm going to have a hard time because you really covered the bill very well and succinctly.
Well, you know what I'd like you to do, first of all, is to give the definition of these intensive needs kids, because they're not just special ed kids. They're above and beyond. So can you do you have the definition of that?
Madam Chair, I do, and I'd be happy to read it into the record, because the intensive need definition is set in regulation. And it basically says that there are 7 criteria of services that children must be receiving in order to qualify for intensive needs funding. The first one is that the children receive direct daily instruction from a certified special ed teacher. The second is that they require multiple services, including related services. That could be like your speech services. All services are not required to be provided by a special ed teacher, but must be supervised. That they receive continuous special education programming. They require assistance in 2 or more basic self-help daily living or adaptive skills. And that that they are assigned basically a special education aide with them to provide services and individual care to those children throughout the school day. And then the last one is that they require transportation services. Madam Chair, on the one component with the aid for the day, the requirement used to be up until little over a year ago that it was one aide full-time all day with these children. The State Board of Education did relax that regulation and said where a district can demonstrate that they can provide the required services, an aide could have up to three children under their supervision at one time. I think we need to revisit that at the department, especially in light with the level of funding that we're looking at. I did some research on the actual cost for aides across the state, and the average annual salary for those aides is about $40,000. So at the approaching the $80,000 funding level, that leaves almost $40,000 for other services, for equipment, and like I said, specialized services. So I think that's one item that we will want to take another look at, considering if this funding package does pass.
Representative Keller.
I'll hold it till later. I was going to ask another question on the intensive care.
Thank you. On that point, are you saying that if currently one aide is deemed acceptable for three special need kids, because we're putting more money in, we'll require each child to have their own aide? Did I misunderstand that?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, you did not misunderstand me. That has been the standard up until this past year, and it was because of the level of funding being at the $26,000 level that districts were saying, look, you don't even pay for a full-time aide, but that's the requirement.
Madam Chairman,
follow up, Representative Gardner.
Do we know how those children who at one time were required to have a full-time aide, how they're doing when one aide is taking care of three children? Are there adverse impacts? Are there problems?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, not yet. But you have to remember that these are your severely multi-handicapped, medically fragile type children. And if there were an instance, say, of a fire, and I'm supervising three children, which one do I move out first? Those are the kinds of considerations that we need to have for this particular category. There's 1,800 of these students statewide. And at going to the almost $80,000 per child, they deserve the one-on-one attention.
Representative Roses?
I'm just going to sit quietly and let everybody else talk, but I can't pass that one up. I taught in a school where we had intensive needs students at a high school level, and I can assure you that when that fire alarm goes off, there isn't a group of kids that's better taken care of than those intensive needs students. My job in the hall where I taught was to be the first responder to the special education room to help with the intensive needs students, and it didn't matter which period day it was. The teacher next to me would use my back door of my classroom to evacuate my students and her students, and she would take my grade book and monitor my students while I went and helped move the intensive needs kids. There were seven intensive needs kids. You'd have 14 adults in that room within 30 seconds. So I don't think our fear of whether they're going to be covered under a fire situation or a fire alarm is an issue. And whether or not we're going to go to having one aide per student because we increase this, there are many more services that are eating up these costs much more rapidly than whether we have another aide or not. I still think I don't have a problem revisiting it, but I certainly don't want to give the impression that because we're giving more money that ought to be an automatic. I think we ought to do a little bit of study on that.
I agree.
My point is,
Madam Chair,
okay, we won't have to say it. Is that your point?
It's related very much here. I didn't want to ask it. Out of those 1,800 students, does the EED know how many of them would be qualified for health and social services assistance, Medicaid, and if that's pursued to the fullest? I mean, I just never heard a discussion on that, but surely you have to ask the question. You know, if we're looking at improving the output of our educational system, and we're here in these cases, many of these cases, one of the best things government can do to help out. I have very close friends that have intensive needs children, and they get tied to that, and it just it's just really a burden that they carry, and I have my deepest empathy, and I'm not at all arguing. Don't misunderstand it. We shouldn't, you know, pay that due, but should that be education funding is my question, and is there money available through other avenues that we might be able to use on that?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, it's my understanding that for particular service providers, school districts can direct bill to Medicaid. But I don't have a list of what all those services are for you, and I know that not all school districts are participating in that program.
Okay, so then the incentive will be removed. Follow up if I can.
By the way, it was Representative Keller that was speaking, and would you like to continue?
Thank you. I'm learning, and I'll do my best here. To continue on that, would not increase, just the point, I guess, it isn't really a question even, that increasing the education funding will remove the incentive for these school districts to pursue that avenue of funding. Possibly.
To this point, Madam Chair.
Representative Hawker.
Again, for the record, Representative Mike Hawker. The state of Alaska, as several years ago, as part of its efforts to, we use the word refinance Medicaid, which means we're being able to hopefully be providing services to such things as, you know, through mechanisms such as schools and hospitals, and using the schools where we could actually bill Medicaid for services provided in the schools, something that has been pursued, made an effort at it. The federal government currently is in a significant pushback of all Medicaid refinancing efforts. If you have looked at this year's Health and Social Services budget, we have about $130 million worth of refinance pushback that we're going to have to be looking at. So the federal government has reversed its policy course where, again, 6 years ago, they were encouraging states to pursue these sort of, we call it pro-share financing opportunities, to where they have now closed the door on them and, in fact, are rejecting those that they had previously accepted. So while it's certainly it's an effort that has been made by the Department of Health and Social Services, it's an effort that we're now encountering severe resistance at the federal level. Representative Wilson knows, has been sitting in those committee meetings with me for low these many years, so, as has Representative Roses. So it's very, very great question. Not an easy answer. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, I'm going to open testimony now. Do you have anything else you want to add, Eddie?
No, Madam Chair, other than we did provide you with a fiscal note, and you'll notice that there's two of them in there, one for the foundation program and then one for the Military Youth Academy, because their funding is tied to the base student allocation.
I did have.
Representative Roses.
Did you want to make any additional comment, Eddie, on the question that Representative Gardner had about the difference in whether you do the average daily attendance count and how that affects intensive needs? Were you satisfied with the response?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Roses. The intensive needs count is done on the last day of the count period, and it's to afford districts the opportunity to get through that process of developing the student's IEP and to ensure that they meet the 7 criteria to qualify for funding. So that's the reason that particular component was moved to the very end of the count period. It's a one-day count.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Gardner?
Thank you. Just to confirm then, so for the base student body, the count is on attendance. For this intensive needs student, it's also attendance, just a different date, or is it enrollment?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, it's based on enrollment in both cases, not on attendance. So the base count is a 20-day count, ends the fourth Friday in October. It's based on enrollment, not attendance. The intensive count is the very last day of the count period, again based on enrollment, but it's a one-day head count.
Thank you.
Not the average of 12.
Okay. Thank you, Eddie.
Okay. Thank you.
And what I'd like to do now is open up testimony, and I know from a lot of the schools it's starting to get a little late, so I'll go to Kodiak first, and I'm going to go kind of go around. Peggy Tuttle in Kodiak, can you hear us, Peggy?
Yes, I can.
Go ahead and give us your testimony.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and Representatives. Again, my name is Peggy Tuttle, and I'm a board member on the Kodiak Island Borough School Board, and want to say first thank you for all the hard work of the task force. We know that they spent a lot of time, and we appreciate all the work that they did. And we are very appreciative that this is going to now be in statute and look forward to that. I do have some concerns, however, about the district cost factor. And the concern I have is that it's on a five-year timeline, whereas the other needs that school districts are facing are on a three-year timeline. So as it looks right now, it's taking us 5 years to get to the 100%. And that district cost factor really affects us in Kodiak with our fuel, electricity, and transportation. Also, our transportation for our sports teams. Again, you're also hearing of the ferry problems that we're incurring, and we're going to have some increased costs for that because of the reduction in our ferry service. Just as one issue with our fuel, we have a $700,000 deficit or extra expenses this year that are going to be higher than we anticipated because of fuel. We had to fly fuel into one of our villages of Carlux, which increased our cost by $3 a gallon just to get it there. So the fuel cost was over $6 a gallon for our village of Carlux. So while we're very appreciative of all the work and of this bill, we would like to express concern over the district cost factor's timeline of implementation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Peggy. And I've had a lot of comments about that too myself. So thank you very much. Let's go to Kenai. Dave Jones, Assistant Superintendent.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Wilson and members of the committee. My name is Dave Jones, and I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I want to thank you for taking the time today to listen to myself and the others, concerned citizens across the state. I'd be remiss if I didn't start by thanking you for your notably increased support for education in the last few years. Those increases have allowed us to maintain levels of service in spite of inflationary costs and provide some additional services. This has resulted in substantial student achievement increases in our district, and for that we thank you. I'd also like to recognize the significant amount of time and effort spent by the members of the Joint Legislative Education Funding Task Force and their staffs this past summer. As noted by many people, the sun was shining and the fish were biting. And the legislators were toiling away in the heat in Anchorage, looking after the educational needs of students across Alaska. That's not lost upon the people in this state, and we owe that task force a great thank you. And I agree wholeheartedly with Representative Hawker's statement before about consensus reached by that committee. It was reached by the committee, and it was reached by the members, school districts that attended that, I want to thank those people for the time they took. I think the time was well spent, as the recommendations made will well serve students across Alaska. Those recommendations summarized for the most part in House Bill 273 before us today. Just quickly on that, I'd like to say our district overwhelmingly supports the declining enrollment protection. Kenai Peninsula Borough School District in the last few years has been experiencing a 2% decline each year. What we're concerned and worried about next year is we had the Agrium plant close, and we are not sure how that's going to affect us. We think it could affect us substantially, and if that happens, this would provide protection to us that we would need. So we're very much in favor of the declining enrollment protection. Our district also supports the intensive needs funding increases. As stated, I think the testimony this summer showed that funding in this area substantially lags behind the related costs across the state. The result, and everybody has to realize that the result of this is that dollars have been pulled from the general classroom to pay for special education needs, And what will happen here now is we'll be able to take this money and put the dollars back in the general education classroom to help increase the assessment results of our general students, and it's very much needed across the state. On that one, the district also overwhelmingly supports the implementation of the district cost factor recommendations. As Representative Hawker stated, when Senate Bill 36, which was the last grade education reform, was passed in 1998, the legislature recognized that area cost differentials, which we now call district cost factors, was an area that needed to be fixed and called for actions to be taken to fix those problems. It's 2008 now, 10 years later, and we're ready to begin to implement that fix. As Kodiak mentioned, we'd like to see it in a little faster than 5 years, but we're also at that point where if that's where it needs to be, we'll take it in 5 years. It's monies that we need, and we would appreciate however you can fund that, but we need it. The base student allocation increases, we wholeheartedly support them. The three-year plan, as people talk about, you know, forward funding and those things, I think it's important for people to understand out there when we talk about long-term funding, the last couple years, as an example, we've had one-year funding, 25% of the cost factors outside, then 50%, but always one-term funding. And it's hard to implement long-term innovative plans on one-year short-term funding. And so that's why it's imperative that we get the longer-term funding. I think that it was nice that the governor recognized the efforts of the joint task force and fully adopted those recommendations. I think it serves as recognition of what the task force did. As a district, we did recognize that the language was a minimum of $100, and we would like to see $200 if possible, as the governor has suggested. But we're very happy with the minimum 100, and hope that it can come up. Two recommendations that aren't in this bill that I think that we can't forget about is, and Representative Hawker mentioned one of them, is it's the assumption that Senate Bill 125 on PERS and TERS cost sharing is passed in substantially the form that existed at adjournment of the last session. Without the protection and the funding that gives us, there is no way that districts across the state can fund the retirement costs that are out there. And, again, that's an area where we thank the legislature sincerely for, because that's a cost we have no solution to without their help. The second Joint Legislative Education Task Force recommendation that I don't want to forget is the recommendation for the Department of Education and Early Development to recalibrate pupil transportation funding levels for fiscal year 2009, utilizing the most recent actual audited costs for the school districts. I believe Eddie and the Department of Education now have those numbers, and as a district, again, that's an area where we've been forced to pay a bill and pull money out of the general fund classroom that we'd like to be able to put back in now and address with those kids in the classroom. Again, in closing, the legislative task force did a great thing this summer. We'd like to see this product move forward, and we want to thank everybody involved in it.
Thank you, Dave. And Representative Roses has a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last two people that testified both mentioned the area cost differential and how they would like to have seen that implemented faster. Just for a little bit of history on where the task force was. When we first began our discussions, there was almost unanimous agreement around the table that we were going to implement 50%. There was no conversation about 100%. We were also talking about 9 or 11 times multiplier for intensive needs. And as the conversations continued around the table, that as more school districts testified as to the impact that was having on their school districts, we then began the process of talking about how would we go about implementing 100% of the area cost differential, realizing that there were a number of committee members that were not at all pleased with the data we were using and the numbers that were being pushed forward for the area cost differential study. So the idea behind it was to implement the 50%, phase in the rest of it over a 3 to 5 year period, to therefore give the Standing Committee on Education, once it was created, to put a blue ribbon task force together to go back and put some better studies and better numbers behind that that people had confidence in. So it was phased in over that period of time. And as a result, then, since we were phasing in the one part, then the move was to also back down from the 11 times for intensive needs to 9 and phase that in over a 3 year period as well. So it was sort of like a compromise on both ends of those to try to get us to a common ground that everybody on the committee could accept and still move forward in trying to make sure that that area cost differential was implemented. So that's sort of the history of where we got to where we were, but the original conversations were at 50%, not 100%.
Okay, Representative Hawker.
And Madam Chair, and I appreciate allowing a response and interrogatory with the testifier here. On the second point, and I wholeheartedly agree with Representative Rose's analysis there. The second point, the recalibration of the pupil transportation rates is a recommendation in our report that required the department to sort through some sort through these audits, finalize those specific numbers. We are just getting that done. The department and our office, my office, is having a chance to review those, go through those calculations, and we fully intend to incorporate that additional spending in this bill before it reaches the floor of the House. So full plan there is to have that information within the next, hopefully the balance of this week, finalized so we could, again, either amend it in as it goes through the final Finance Committee hearings. So we have remembered that, and it will be in the bill.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Jones. Now we will go to Homer, and I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, but I'm going to give it a try. Kiki Abrahamson?
Yes, hello. I'm sorry to tell you that I did do a lot of fishing and horseback riding this summer, but I finally caught up with the Joint Legislative Education Funding Task Force in August, and I have to say this was my first involvement in government at this level, and I was so pleasantly impressed with the quality and ease of obtaining the information. And with the whole process and collaboration by the legislators, I was able to come to the August 16th hearing and testify. And I just, too, want to reiterate my thank you for making the democratic process so easy for a newbie. I am a school teacher, and I don't begin to understand the complexities of the state funding. But some of the problems that were discussed here, I know, are really magnified in small charter schools that are underfunded. And I understand the reasoning behind commending the charter school funding issues to a standing education committee, but I just want to beg everybody who's listening here, please don't forget us. I am an advocate for this bill. I believe that funding all students with an increased higher base allocation and providing the districts with more reasonable funds for intensive needs and adjusting district cost vectors is a huge step in the right direction for all Alaska students. And I really want to thank all the legislators and Eddie Jeans and Dave Jones for responding to my questions as I learn how this all works. And keep up the good work. I have to tell you, I was really happy to get on this track. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Let's go to Wrangell. Woody Wilson, superintendent.
You know that guy?
Just a little.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Woody Wilson. For the record, I am superintendent of Wrangell Public Schools. And at first, I would like to also thank the Legislative Task Force for their very hard work, and particularly Representative Hawker for his leadership on the task force. He managed a very difficult task with a group of individuals that had some very differing opinions. And I think he's he's found a calling there. So I really appreciate his work this summer. Secondly, I just go through the points. The declining enrollment piece in this bill is excellent. It basically replaces what used to be in the law until it was removed in 1998 with Senate Bill 36 at that time. And had this been in place several years ago when I was superintendent in Haines, we probably would have not been sued by the union, and it would have saved us a lot of grief and a lot of anxious moments and a lot of hurt feelings. And so I'm pleased that the legislature has looked at this, and particularly the task force, and thank you very much for putting that back in. That's a very important piece. In terms of the intensive need students, that's certainly something, again, that has been a need for some time. And I'm glad that's in there and that's been listened to and that you are taking some action on that. The area cost differential certainly for Wrangell has been a significant issue for a number of years. Going way back into the 80s, we've been funded at the same rate as Anchorage. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that it costs more money to run a school here than it does in Anchorage. Just look at our fuel costs and you can figure that out. Transportation costs, any of the factors that you'd like to look at, and those are pretty much documented in the studies that have been done. I would like to see is that I too am concerned about the intensive funding being funded at full tilt in 2011 and the cost study not being completely funded until 2013. That's a concern. We have these increased energy costs this year, and as Representative Hawker did indicate, that may actually change some of the figures that have been represented in the cost study work that's been done previously. So if there was any way that you could step it up so that we would get an increase this year, that would be really fantastic for the rural schools, particularly because of the energy costs. And then I would say that funding for the base student allocation in advance is just absolutely fantastic. Every year previous to this time, we have to think about our staffing at this time of year, and we have to worry about whether or not we're going to have enough money. What are we going to tell teachers? We oftentimes lose staff because we can't promise them a job the following year. It causes a lot of hard feelings in communities, and it causes a lot of teacher turnover. So having this information in advance is going to be a very stabilizing move for school districts, and we really appreciate that. And as Representative Hawker also mentioned when he was talking about transportation, we currently put between 30 and 40, I didn't bring this figure, but it's between $30,000 and $40,000 a year that we have to take out of our classroom instructional money to pay for our transportation. It was never intended to be that way, I don't think, so I'm really pleased that the transportation is going to be looked at. In summary, I'll just say I'm really pleased that the legislature has done some very difficult work, and we support this bill, and if there's any way you could give us a boost this year, we got 50% last year, and it would be nice if we could get that first installment this year, 12.5%. And I appreciate it, and thank you for listening.
Thank you very much,
Madam Chair.
Representative Fairclough.
It's awkward in the current ethical situations that we've put in, but I know who that is, and I'm not sure the general public knows. So just for the record, I think we might want to clarify.
Okay. I didn't even think of that. Thank you. That was my husband. He is the superintendent of schools in Wrangell. So.
And, Madam Chair, if I might, I am sure that you have been involved in education for many years. I just wanted that to go into the record just because of
I even used to be a school nurse. So.
That's right.
Okay, let's go back to Kodiak. And Betty Odell is the school board president. Betty, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can.
Well, I hope the weather is as nice in Juneau as it is in Kodiak today.
You know what? I don't even know what it was. We were all working so hard. I guess we did have a few flakes of snow, but I don't think it was anything serious. So anyway, Betty, go ahead.
A beautiful, sunny, warm day, and we don't see those very often.
No, I guess not.
Anyway, I'd like to thank you all for your effort to analyze the school funding formula and to stabilize school funding. I've been on the school board here. This is now my sixth year, and every year we see a $2 million increase in our budget, and every year it's pretty much the same story. It's health insurance, salary increases, and fuel increases. So I'll tell you that we are very much in favor of the House bill, and we are counting on the $200 increase of the base student allocation, which is coming from the governor's budget proposal. We're counting on that money. We're looking at somewhat of a deficit this year because of all of our increased costs. And anyway, there are other things in there that we're happy with: the declining enrollment protection, the issue of transportation funding, and forward funding. Those are all things that we're going to be looking to see what the outcome is. So. Anyway, that's it for me.
Okay, thank you very much, Betty. Next, there at Kodiak, I have three more people on the list anyway. Larry Ledoux, superintendent.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to your committee today. You know, I really enjoyed listening to Representative Hawker's presentation. It was very clear and succinct and very child-centered. For the first time in many, many years that I've been going through a budget, we're not talking about the sky falling. Certainly we have financial challenges, but to be sitting down sort of collegially across parties to talk about kids and planning is really great, and I wish Representative Hawker's presentation could be presented statewide so that people see that we have a lot to be proud of. I think one of the most important things that we'll have if this passes is the opportunity to do effective planning. Planning is very important to us because it allows us to prioritize.
Larry, excuse me, but could you speak up just a little bit more?
I will try. I have sort of a soft voice when I'm not talking to myself. I think that the funding predictability that will come with passage of this bill will lead to more effective planning, and that planning will help us ensure that we focus our attention on every child. I'm very supportive of the intensive funding. We need it. It's very expensive. And really, it will allow us to focus on the needs of an individual child instead of the cost to educate them. My responsibility under the school district's mission is to ensure that every child reaches their full potential. So I don't necessarily look at cost. I look at need. But I also realize that it's very expensive. And so your support is very much appreciated and will be well used. I'd like to certainly share Dave Jones' concerns and comments, and Woody's also, in terms of some of our other concerns. This school year alone, we're running a transportation deficit of $242,000. We're also concerned with, I know it's not in the bill specifically, with a hold harmless for small schools. We had four schools at the start of the count that went between 10 and 14 students. And those communities, and indeed our district, were on edge during that whole count to find out whether we're going to close or open those schools. It's very difficult for the community. It's hard on planning in terms of the possibility of closing a school in November. We really can't do that. And again, it's a concern. I know it's not specifically addressed, but I do know that you talked about it as a committee. So that need is really there. We hope that you'll continue to take a look at school funding. Even though we're getting an increase this next year, if you pass this, we still are dealing with some very severe financial shortfalls. We estimate our fuel and electricity increases alone next year will total over $700,000. So most of the gains that we will receive, you know, through the foundation or even the intensive program, will be pulled away from kids to fund fuel. And we really want to keep every dollar as close to the individual needs of children as we can. And so we're going to be facing that. Our health insurance continues to climb. We can't really control it. This year it went up 21%. We're estimating 15 next year. We really can't control that. So we appreciate everything that you do. We, again, I appreciate how you work together to stabilize funding, and we hope that you'll do the best that you can to move us closer to full funding of the cost differentials, the intensives, and everything else within the bill. And, again, I share my thanks with everyone that's testified.
Thank you. Larry, tell me, did you have to close any of the schools?
We did not have to close any schools, but next year we plan on closing two schools, Chiniac and Danger Bay, and we'll still have to try to maintain them, at least their infrastructure, because when we closed one before, it cost us a fortune to reopen it in terms of just getting the facility ready. So while we won't receive any funds for the to support the buildings, we'll still have to spend some money to protect them.
I see. Representative Gardner and then Representative Seaton after her.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ledoux, thank you very much for your testimony and for participating in this. I have a question about closing schools, and I know there's always a lot of concern when a community is in danger of losing their schools, but my question for you is, do you support the state having a minimum school size? And if so, do you have any recommendations as to a mechanism for actually, you know, making the determination that a school should be closed because of declining numbers?
Well, I believe, practically speaking, you have to have a minimum school size, and I think 10 is as good a number as any. But I believe it's that process as you are moving from below 10 that we need some kind of mechanism in place that is flexible enough to allow us to respond to the needs of the children, sort of a transition period. And I don't know what that is, because I know that, you know, some might take advantage of that. But on the other hand, I think we need some funds and flexibility to phase in that closing so it doesn't shock the community.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. You mentioned health care cost increases in the last 2 years. Could you repeat those for me?
Well, I think that this year it's 21%, and I think we're estimating between 9 and 15% for next year. And those are costs that we really can't control. We're essentially self-insured, like many districts in the state, and you just have to pay what you have to pay. And, again, every dollar comes away from the classroom.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Larry, I guess I don't quite understand that. Are you talking about when you say health insurance, are you saying that that's part of the retirement program that you have, or what do you mean when you say that?
Well, it's our employee health plans that we have. They go up every year, and it's just an incredible strain on our budget. For instance, just maintaining our fuel and electricity increases for FY09, our estimated health increase, and our step and column increases with our classified and certified staff total over $2 million alone just in uncontrolled increases, much less, you know, other costs associated with fuel and electricity. So it's to get where we need to be to achieve mission, you know, everything that we get is sort of gobbled up, and the, you know, the challenge before us as a district is to respond to those needs and get every dollar we can to meet the needs of individual children.
Wow, I just didn't realize it jumped that much this year, and I'm sure other schools are experiencing the same thing, but no one's mentioned that before. Representative Roses.
While I appreciate that the cost of medical is something that's not controlled, certainly the options that are available for other alternatives for medical coverage rather than just doing it themselves is available and has been discussed, along with, you know, many of the other districts have seen considerable increases in copay that the employees pay. So there, while I appreciate the fact that the increases aren't controllable, the way in which you handle those are. So I certainly have been involved in much of that, and I realize it's a very difficult an expensive process to go through, but I guess there are some other options that can be explored.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Larry. We appreciate it. Next is Stuart McDonald, Assistant Superintendent.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I just wanted to add the thought of if this particular set of recommendations does not go through, the crisis that we would be facing would be just immense when we consider what this recommendation does correct or at least address and provide funding for it. So great appreciation for these recommendations and great hope and anticipation that they're going to pass and move through. Very much in favor of the $200 increase of the governor's proposal to go with this. Anyway, just that's the case that I would like to make there. I would want to make the also the case on the intensive needs increases. Very appreciated as well. In our small schools, when we have a very small school with a very small infrastructure and we have one of these intensive needs students attending that school, the cost of literally being able to provide the services needed are often even higher than you might expect if they were attending a urban school setting. And so, again, the relief is very much appreciated. And sadly, almost never enough sometimes when you consider some of our unique circumstances, but and those exist. The other thing is to just say that when we look at the energy protection ideas that I know are not actually present in this recommendation, Larry, you've heard him mention every dollar that we spend on these fixed costs is a dollar we take away from the classroom. One of the things that has happened, I'm noticing in the public here in Kodiak, is that people are really excited about the publicity of this potential additional funding that's coming. And there's an excitement of what it's generated and what could take place in our schools. So we've been engaged in a lot of planning, very excited about being able to identify our district mission, set goals, and really move forward in our funding rather than talk in terms of cuts. The sober reality was when we saw the excitement of the money that is coming in the form of relief, instead of being able to really move forward with all of those, we had to come back and say, okay, how can we tighten our belts and all of the things that we need to tighten our belts on so that we don't lose the visible benefit of this recommendation if it should be passed, and how can we fulfill those missions and keep that public trust of new money, meaning that we get to move forward and meet those missions. So that's what we've been engaged in here in Kodiak, and I want to say thank you for the recommendation. We fully support them and recognize in order to keep the visible benefits of them, we're having to be very thoughtful in planning and make sure that the public gets to see those benefits rather than them just get gobbled up by things like utility costs and invisible things.
Good point.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to throw a wet blanket on this. I plan on supporting the bill as it exists in front of us today, but I've heard two people at least testify from Kodiak that they're counting on the governor's budget. And I would just say that that's a gamble. you're gambling that the House of Representatives will endorse the governor's proposal and that the Senate will do that. Certainly, if it passes both houses, I think it's a lot more certainty that she'll sign that original budget. But I just hope that we're being prudent with our planning process and hoping for the best as far as the outcome goes. And I just will restate that I do plan on supporting this bill moving forward. I just don't want people to get overly zealous with their planning process and then have to disappoint their community. So I just hope we're moving cautiously as we go forward with those recommendations to school boards out in our communities. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Luke Folk, did you still have any more comments?
I just have a brief one, Madam Chairperson. Thank you for allowing me the time to talk today. again, you've heard the needs of our district in Kodiak. I would just like to thank the task force for taking the time to address school district needs across the state and creating a good product here, or at least something that moves us forward in the right direction. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else online that I don't know about? No one online? Okay, I'm going to close the online testimony then, and we'll go to the room here. We'll start out with John Alcantara.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, Madam Chair and members of the House HES Committee, my name is John Alcantara. I represent 12,500-plus public school employee members of NEA Alaska. Welcome back to Juneau for your first 90-day session, and thanks, everybody, for being here today. I first off want to start off by thanking the funding task force, specifically Chair Representative Hawker and his staff, Julie Lucky, and also Charisse before. And I agree with the comments made by the individual from Homer, which talked about this was the most user-friendly task force committee ever, and I started coming to Juneau in 1984, so I speak with at least 24 years of experience that never has there been a group that had this kind of information available and the volume of information in such a short time frame. And I applaud the efforts of other members of the committee, Representative Roses, Representative Seaton, and all the rest, and also Mr. Carl Rose as the governor's appointee to the task force. So I do want to say that House Bill 273 is certainly a product of a lot of work that happened over the summertime. I was there for most of the meetings, and if I recall, there was at least about 6 to 8 full days of meetings, and it's rare that any issue, and even as an issue as important as K-12 funding that represents over a $1 billion commitment of the state of Alaska on an annual basis, gets that kind of time. And it's impossible to do here in Juneau when you guys have the busy schedules that you have, and I know I'll be seeing many of you in another finance subcommittee here in about 10 minutes. So I just wanted to say that that work that was done throughout the summer was fantastic work, and I applaud the efforts of all of you and yourself, Madam Chair, Representative Olson, others that listened in to every task force meeting telephonically if they couldn't be there in Anchorage in person. So I guess applaud the efforts. I'm going to talk, you know, the intensive needs piece to finally see the funding of intensive needs students begin to approach the costs of them, I think is a great step, and I'm glad to see that that will be covered over the next 3 fiscal years if this bill and this plan moves forward. Representative Hawker did a great job of kind of addressing the base student allocation part of the bill. Obviously, first, and the fact that it's kind of a minimum placeholder, if you will, and Representative Faircloth and others mentioned the governor's number. I guess just point out that a $100 increase to a $5,380 base, everybody here can do the math, it's less than 2% a year, and certainly far short of inflation. So we're looking at, we'll be looking at trying to increase that number at the same time, realizing the work of Senate Bill 125 mentioned by, I believe, Dave Jones earlier, and other pieces of the puzzle that have to fall into place. But I thank all of you. I mean, I know you're all committed to K-12 education and the constitutional mandate of funding our schools, and I think the work that was done is fantastic. And I think as it moves forward to the Finance Committee, we'll have another chance and more data to address BSA issues and address some of the other issues. So thank you on behalf of NEA Alaska, and I can answer any questions if there are any.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mary Frances.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mary Frances, the Executive Director for the Council of School Administrators. I speak on behalf of all the school principals, superintendents, and finance officers in the state. We do have a resolution in support of the task force recommendations. I've taken it to all your offices, but I also brought it here for your attention. This committee did an amazing job. I only missed one committee meeting because I wasn't fishing this summer, but It was just amazing to watch the synergy that developed and the ability of the chair, Chair Hawker, who I'd like to thank for his leadership, to see that diverse views were brought together and resulted in a collaboration and a collective agreement on issues that could be agreed upon. And those that were more contentious were set aside rather than spend a lot of time working on a stalemate, focus really on the most important issues. The other thing that was amazing to the school districts that I speak on behalf of also was the amount of time the committee took to listen to the detail from districts. There were some districts that probably spoke for 2 hours or were grilled for 2 hours, and it was fantastic. And as an observer of the legislative process, your committees never have that kind of time, and that's what was so amazing. My members have two suggestions. One is we do support a $200 BSA. We all agreed to that. And also we would like to see a 3-year implementation of the district cost factors. But we certainly appreciate the work that has been done. At a very minimum, we support the task force recommendations moving forward. The committee did the heavy lifting. I guess that's the point. They spent a lot of time this summer doing the heavy lifting, and it would be our hope that their work is not second-guessed, I guess is the way I would put it. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it. We do support this bill moving forward.
Mayor Francis, what was the first? You had two suggestions. What was the first one?
$200 on the BSA in each of the next 3 years.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I don't see any. Representative Seaton has a question.
No, I'll save it for discussion. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. And that leaves us with one more, and he was on the task force, and that's Carl Rose.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, and thank you for the opportunity to support this bill. You've heard a lot on the bill, and in the interest of time, I'm sure I'll have some time later on to speak about it, but I would like to talk to you about the policy implication of what we're dealing with here. We're faced with an opportunity to address some fixes to Senate Bill 36 that has been 10 years in the making. And so you have the opportunity to take a look at the base student allocation, the cost differentials. You're taking a look at the intensive needs. You're looking at a whole harmless clause that is quite different than what we had. And in totality, you're also looking at readjusting the transportation to move it from 03 levels in a grant to the most recent levels, which is probably 07. The magnitude of a move like this inside the foundation formula, yes, you're keeping the capsule of the formula, but you're changing most of the components to make it appropriate for what we're trying to do in K-12 education. Tremendous opportunity, and on behalf of the task force and working with all of the people who were involved, it was an opportunity for us to have more than 5 minutes in testimony, to have more than 3 minutes in testimony. As was mentioned earlier, Anchorage had 2 hours to explain the impact of intensive needs and special education and block grants and a whole bunch of things that we couldn't deal with. But I think the task force had a chance to get a full view of what the impact is on education in terms of how we move forward and address all these challenges. So I would just share with you, the bill is straightforward. If you take a look at the bill, there's only 8 sections of it. 3 of those sections are intensive needs, the phase in. The other sections are talking about the cost differentials. It's fairly straightforward. A lot of work was done. We heard from a lot of people across the state, and I think the leadership that Representative Hawker provided gave us an opportunity to come to consensus, which is something I've not enjoyed very often. To be able to sit down and voice our concerns and come to some level of agreement and move forward. So I was thankful for having the opportunity to serve. I was appreciative of the action that was taken. I want to talk to you about 2 things that are coming up. They may be deal breakers. I don't know.
As the session moves on, I don't know what it would look like. But it calls for $100 a year, and people are looking for $200 a year. $100 a year means 100 in 09. It means 200 plus 100 in 10, and it means 300 plus 200 plus 100 in fiscal year 2011. That's $600. It's not 1, 2, and 3. It's 600. If you move to 200, you're looking at $1,200 increase in 3 years. That's a lot of money. I'm in favor of more money for education. I don't think that surprises anyone here. But I am concerned about the public policy being placed in statute so that we have a mechanism to go and revisit. If you want to add additional money into the future, you have the mechanism to do it. My greatest fear is that we wind up with some sort of a grant cash process because we can't come to agreement and we always start back at ground level. The next thing would be the phase-in, the five-year phase-in of the cost differential. A lot of people would like to see 3 years. These are things that we're trying to compress and phase in along with the intensive needs. Thank you to Representative Rose for bringing that up. The thing that's important here is that we're dealing with a number of issues, and we've come to consensus, and I think that this is the best product that we could come up with. It represents where we wished we were at the end of last session, but we didn't have the time to get there. So the summer gave us a chance to get there, and I'm going to stop my testimony right now. I am fully supportive of moving this out of committee and getting it on to finance, and I'll try to answer any questions you might have. So thank you for your time.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Rose, for your testimony and your support. I think there's some confusion, certainly on my part, I guess, on the base student allocation increase of $100 a year. And I'm looking at the sponsor substitute, which increases by 100 from 5480 to 5580, and then maybe just a typo to 5580 again in 2010. So I don't know if my question is for Mr. Rose or for the bill sponsor.
Well,
I just like clarification.
Thank you. Through the chair, it's $100 per year, and so what you're looking at is compounding of that $100. So you're looking at 5580, 5680, and 5780. That's how it comes up. But if you do the compounding math, you're looking at a $600 increase overall. So I would just share with you that, you know, for every 100 you put in, you also include what you did the year before, and this is a 3-year phase-in. So maybe I've just complicated things. It's the compounding of the math that is, you know, the end result is going to be not just $300 more. It'll be 100 in the first year, 09. In the second year, you'll get another 100 plus 100 from 09.
I see.
And in the third year, you'll get another 100 plus 100 from 010 or from 2010 and 2009. So, you know, I'm looking at this in totality. That's just the base student allocation. Uh-huh. If you take a look at what the cost differential will do, that's somewhere around a $48 million price tag. If you look at intensive needs, that's about a $42 million price tag. Before you know it, you're talking about real money here. So I would just share with you, I'm looking at this in totality. I would like to see more. It would expedite or expedite some of the concerns of my membership, but I don't want to do anything at the risk of cratering in the public policy that gives us the mechanism to move forward. If that helps.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Representative Roses?
I just wanted to thank Carl for all of his years of service to education, and I did have one question. How many years have you been doing this? And doesn't this come closer to some of the conversations that we had back in the 70s?
Yes. I was first elected to the school board in Skagway in 1974, and we were talking about forward funding then. We came so close last year, and I was so excited to hear about forward funding, but now people have the understanding of what it means. So we have the content now to be able to do the policy, and this is something that's been a long time in coming. I guess I've been down here for a long time, and I can't really blame anybody for what we've done because I've been part and parcel of some of it. But, you know, we do what we can when we have the opportunity. We have a tremendous opportunity now. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, I will close testimony And what are the wishes of the committee? Questions? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I had to step out, but I was wondering, did the question get answered about the step-down procedures and on schools that fall below 10?
No. Eddie Jeans, would you please come forward and answer that quickly for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Eddie Jeans, Director of School Finance. The hold harmless for declining enrollment will be calculated on the school size adjusted ADM for the district as a whole. So when you have schools that fall below 10, they are funded with the largest school in the district, which means their adjustment is substantially smaller. It may or may not be enough to trigger the hold harmless. It depends on how large the school district is. But if you had a number of them, like Kodiak was describing, then the hold harmless would probably kick in for them. And so it would be phased down over a three-year period.
Representative Haircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that point, if there's multiple years of decline that exceed 5%, do they continue to qualify in the first year for the 75%, or do you hold it to the cycle of where it started, the decline?
Through the chair, Representative Faircloth, the way I've done it in the past was I ran it both ways, and whichever way benefited the district, we gave them the benefit of the benefit. So,
Madam Chair, well, I have a different question, so I'll get in line with everyone else.
Go ahead.
My only concern, and again, I'm going to pass the bill forward, it's because I do believe that if you're basing your school district's future funding on last year's allocation, that's appropriate to do, and I think we should just be stepping up and making sure that we hold schools harmless on that point. But I'm concerned and wondering whether you've discussed with the Department of Revenue the long-term implications of bumping up by almost $100 million more our funding in schools and how we're going to sustain that funding in a declining oil revenue when we have a state that is starting to be locked up for resource development.
Through the chair, Representative Faircloth, I have not had those discussions with Department of Revenue, and it's the legislature that has the power of appropriation. So
you don't have a way to sustain it with declining oil production?
We don't. Any other questions? Representative Seaton?
No, I didn't have a question for Eddie, but I did have some more discussion.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, it was a real pleasure serving on the task force, and I just wanted to say publicly that, you know, Representative Hawker did a great job with his staff being able to get a bunch of cats, you know, herding cats or whatever, but that those people that didn't stay up with the task force or weren't listening on teleconference, I wanted to make sure that everybody understood that the all of the issues were fully publicly vetted, which was a very great process that was conducted. It wasn't backroom deals. It wasn't things that were not discussed. The thing that has been brought up about doing the geographic cost differential in 3 years, I had that proposal on the table. We fully talked about it. I finally agreed that with this package going together as a package, it worked and we got there. So I just wanted to let the whole committee know and the people that are listening here, because there's probably a different audience than was listening to the task force over the summer, that this very public process was extremely extremely good, and I'm very pleased with the results.
Great. Any other comments? Representative Faircloth.
Thank you. If we're in discussion on the bill, my only concern is being able to sustain it and not to produce false numbers out there. And as you've said, Madam Chair, that's up to us in long-term planning. But I guess I look to the administration to lead, because they're the ones making the recommendation, and the Department of Revenue has showed us that decline. So I'll be interested to see, as the Finance Committee takes up the discussion, how we can ensure that we make sure that this constitutionally mandated item is fully funded. But that said, I just send a personal recommendation forward to the Finance Committee that I'm concerned that when I support extra money for schools to go into the classroom, that we're talking about adding aides without really knowing a quantitative benefit versus smaller classroom sizes or whatever teachers might think that they best need in those classrooms. And so I fully support the funding going into those classrooms. I just hope that we don't eat it up in bureaucracy at the top.
Yeah, I might make the comment that when I first came in the legislature, we were cutting, you know, millions of dollars to try to balance the budget, and worked really hard, and it was blood, sweat, and tears, actually, to see how we could do it without affecting education and without having to say to the education, you have to have a cut. And I hope that, and we were able to do that, and I hope that we never come to the point where we have to actually make cuts in education. And I think that's one thing that we all agree on, but you never know. So I agree. Sustainability is something that we all have to think about. So anyway, more comments, Representative Fairclough?
Madam Chair, we have those listening at home that are advocates that I greatly appreciate, as I know all the committee members do, for coming out and testifying tonight. But there are other bills that are very critical to this particular discussion being fruitful, too. Representative Hawker has in Senate Finance, out of our Ways and Means Committee, several components. One for fiscal planning for the administration so that we can see those long-term resources. Two, another item in our toolbox for pension obligation bonds. And three, I've seen introduced, which I believe will negatively impact discussion, a desire by some to go back to the old retirement system different. And so if that gets muddled in the discussion, I can see where this might be held hostage because we're opening up, again, fiscal uncertainty on the other side. So it is a teeter-totter that we carefully balance what we have moving forward. And I would like to see this bill passed as well as the pension obligation bonds that are being held right now in Senate Finance and SB 125, the PERS and TERS cost sharing for the district. So just it's more than one bill we deal with down here, even though we take on one at a time. So I just appreciate all those who are listening today and those that are have attended today, and hope that you consider that when you make recommendations to us to help move that other much-needed legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. And I do want to thank the people that testified. I know it's not always easy to give all praises when in the back of your head you're worried about how we're going to do some of this stuff. So anyway, thank you so much. And Representative Gardner, do you have another question?
Another comment, if we're okay. The time is right. As I said, I have such confidence in the process here that I'm going to support this bill without hesitation. But I toyed briefly with selecting amend. And one of the things that has really struck me is this, if we currently have one aide with three severely disabled children, and if we went to one each, just $40,000, and I thought to myself, well, what if we just went to two each and put that other money into alcohol treatment? How would that impact the numbers that we have of severely disabled? And I'm borrowing a page from Representative Cisna about prevention, and I think this body has some work to do on that. I wish we could do something of comparable caliber.
I agree. Representative Rosen.
Thank you. It is with a great deal of excitement as well as appreciation for being able to move House Bill 273 with attached fiscal notes and any other pertinent data.
Okay. Hearing no objection, so moved. So we have moved House Bill 273 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. So thank you very much, Representative Hawker. And I do want to make a comment about our next meeting. Let's see what my notes are. I know I had some, but I can't remember what it was. So.
It's the Governor's Health Care Compact, I think.
Okay. This Thursday, we will be hearing House Bill 234, Education Loan Repayment Program, and House Bill 337, the health care governor's bill on plans, commissions, and facilities. So see you all next week, and we are adjourned.